Hello, this is Second Society Project, and this is Dave Schmidt with Joe Atwell today. And I'd like to welcome you to our conversation. How you doing, Joe?
Just fine, Dave. You're in the Dominican Republic. It's quite an exotic location.
Well, I seem to have timed my visit here perfectly since the United States and large parts of it are in the grips of of an ice chill, huh?
Yeah, the situation in Texas is really tragic, but also very illustrative of the fact that at this point, normal middle-class Americans cannot rely on the government for anything. We need to start to have a whole new perspective of how to get on in the world. And that begins with organizing our communities. We have to stop being so isolated and organize ourselves into communities and groups which recognize one another and can be there for assistance when times are rough. I mean, just as an example, you have all of these water pipes blow up, explode because of the frozen water inside them. If people had been in communities, they would have exchanged information that can be avoided by simply leaving one spigot running so that the water is moving and will not freeze. Beyond that, you can just turn the water off at the main and that'll solve the problem completely. But it's just totally avoid, you know, it would have been completely avoidable. And it's the kind of thing that groups who are involved in self-preservation, self-defense, self-awareness, that we can do that stuff. So it's a great moment for this lesson. I'm sorry it was so painful for so many people to experience.
Right. Well, you know, the key word there is subsidiarity.
Yeah.
The idea that you always devolve action down to the lowest level which can handle a particular problem. You don't kick simple problems up to high levels and centralized governments or organizations. That's what power crazy people like to encourage, and I hope that this that last year of 2020 and these kind of events are opportunities for us to learn this sort of thing.
Yeah, and existing groups like the ones that are inside American Catholicism can also benefit from this. You mentioned that you had some ideas about how to expand awareness of the needs for a new sort of organizational understanding inside Catholicism, American Catholicism. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, right. So first of all, one of the things that everybody seems to be in the grip of, whether it is somebody in civil society, civic society, non-religious person, or somebody that belongs to a denomination like Catholicism, they all seem to have been led down a chute into thinking that obedience includes even thought control and speech, and that one can't even express a contrary opinion, say, regarding masks in your church or masks in the marketplace without incurring some kind of guilt of being a dissident or terrorist or a defiant person. And so people need to see it's so important for our young people in colleges to be taught how to make distinctions. There's a distinction between, revolutionary actions, violent actions, or even nonviolent revolutionary actions, and just having a discussion. Discussion is what prevents violence, actually. So we need to move in the directions of learning how to voice our aspirations and our concerns. So one thing I think that Catholics in particular could contribute to this is that they have a long history of being able to mount campaigns, and preferably, I think, without the hierarchy being the generators of this. But again, applying the principle of subsidiarity, there are devotional practices that Catholics have always been able to manifest, and these things, we don't even talk about them being having their origins in the people, but rather in the Holy Spirit acting in the world. So, for instance, I think that what's really been painfully absent from this is people's openness to things like processions, right? So Catholics have an understanding of Marian theology, which Protestants don't have, of course. But for Catholics, Marian theology is precisely the kind of thing that answers this COVID problem. So if you allow me to digress a little bit into
that. No, I'm fascinated by this. Go on, please.
Brief snippet of theology is that, and Protestants will recognize this in some form as well. those who haven't bought into the into the defamation against the Middle Ages and scholastic philosophy. So Mary is the philosophical type or the metaphysical type of incarnation. And by this we mean the union of that which is non-material with the material, right? So the famous account in Luke is of the angel Gabriel appearing to Mary and informing her that she's going to be the mother of God. So the Catholics have this whole theology of her womb being the place where the spiritual, the informational, the knowledgeable, the semantic, the meaningful, and wisdom, all of which, of course, derives from the divine, coming into connection with the human, the earthly, and the material. And this COVID story is a whole story of the corruption of issues of information and matter. In this case, instantiated in a biological problem, a presumed medical problem, and the elites are toying with this, and they're toying with our lack of understanding and metaphysical grounding. And so all of these issues, for instance, the encroaching and advancing, toying around with the genetic information of our species.
This is a great subject right now.
On bonk. I mean, they want to line everybody. I mean, Bill Gates, if he could, would have us all lined up at the community center getting a jab of a completely untested technology on the borders of vaccination. I don't even know if we can call it vaccination. It's really genetic modification, period. And if it isn't now, these current Pfizer and Moderna and AstraZeneca vaccines are just stepping stones to a world not of vaccination against diseases, but a world where the elites vaccinate the world against human
against
beings.
Thinking.
Yes.
Against those concepts which you just talked about, which come from the divine, you know, that our capacity to understand, you know, this is what they'll vaccinate us against. Huxley in Brave New World was very clear as to the intentions of the oligarchs.
Yeah, and I saw it working in bureaucracy for almost a decade, a painful decade. There is a war on the intellect. There is a war on particularly European modes of intellect. And I'm not saying that there aren't people around the world can think in certain ways, but we have a cultural way of mixing our emotions and our intellect to produce the particular culture that we did as Europeans, as varied as it was from Eastern Europe to Northwestern Europe and Southern Europe up towards the Baltic, you know. So, I even saw a story that yesterday I was watching this, that they're trying to introduce a new type of mathematics which undermines the idea that there is such a thing as right answers. That this is, you know, we saw this like 20 years ago, those of us who were in academia saw this being denounced as logocentrism. Now I guess it's a war even against simple counting, you know. So they're really trying to just undermine everything. They're trying to drive us insane with these practices of masking and distancing, and they're also trying to make it impossible for the European, particularly the European male, from expressing his talents, his neurobiologically characteristic way of interacting with the world and each other. It's all in their sights, and they're going after it. So, really, I think Catholics have a opportunity. Catholics worldwide, not just European Catholics, but all Catholics of all ethnicities and races, to, in their own culturally specific ways, say no to this advancing bio-tyranny that the elites have planned for us. And we're going to be proven right about this as much as they call us conspiracy nuts. Just like Huxley that you mentioned in that, what was it, a 1958 interview or something?
Yeah.
Just as that sounded really at the edge, had anybody with less credentials than he said that, they would just be ignored as a crackpot. But these things always, when people who have the experience, the life experience in business or in the humanities or in the sciences or the professions, when serious people start saying that, it's really foolish for others to just discount them as nutcases, especially if they talk sanely, right? We're not talking about Martians and reptiles and stuff like that. We're talking about real things that our friends and neighbors should be perking their ears up to.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any specific things that Catholics might want to try in terms to leverage or to make their organizational energy, be able to be more useful in this present circumstance?
Right. Well, why not be open? Here's my call to Catholics. Why not be open to the action of the Holy Spirit to have, let's say, a Marian procession? This is common in a lot of these countries, not in the United States.
What is a Marian procession?
Well, it's a way of expressing devotion and petition to the Mother of God to intervene in some type of crisis. I mean, there are processions that go on as part of the liturgical year anyway, especially in a country like this. They have processions through the street, and maybe they'll carry like an image or a statue of Mary, and they'll sing, appropriate songs, and they'll wind up at the cathedral or some other church. But these things can also be done in response to famines and plagues and weather crises. And so this is a case, whether you believe that there's some kind of virus out there or not, or whether you think it's all the pandemic is an exaggerated sham built on a virus that may or may not exist. Whatever your assessment is, and we can all be forgiven for not knowing the answer to those questions because we're information deprived. Even professionals are information deprived. However you characterize the problem, this is one where if you really hold to the tenets of the faith, if you're Catholic, you should be eager to get out there, organize with your fellow Catholics. You don't have to ask the bishop if you're allowed to, for God's sakes. You don't even have to ask your parish priest, although you'd probably like to invite them. Say, look, guys, come on. Lead. I mean, shepherds anyway are supposed to lead from behind. We can do this as just grassroots, everyday people. Let me give an example.
Sure. Just,
and then we can come back to the processions. So I was told when I came here, you can't receive, even back home in the United States, I was told this, you can't receive communion on the tongue anymore because of the COVID rules. And I said, well, that's bunk, because Catholics are absolutely on firm ground if they insist on receiving communion on the tongue. I know. Look, I apologize if there's people out there who aren't Catholic. You think, oh, my God, what kind of crazy picayune stuff. This is the problem with Catholics, the angels on dancing on the head. Well, okay. Just bear with me for a while, because these signs and symbols are there for a reason, and I think we're seeing in the case of COVID where it comes into play. So I just boldly go up there, I take off the mask, I stick out my tongue, and guess what the priest does? He slaps a communion wafer on my tongue, the body of Christ. So it's absolutely untrue. So what I'm trying to do is, it's untrue that you can't do that. I just broke the taboo, right? And a lot of these taboos are self-enforced. That's our problem, Joe. I mean,
sure.
Europeans we're so doggone obedient. And another thing was we just had Ash Wednesday. So now the rule is, no more ash, the cross on the forehead and the ash. No, they're going to have a bunch of women up there sprinkling ashes on the top of your head, So finally, I snagged a deacon at the end of the service, and I said, look, deacon, I want a, I want a, a, a cross on the top of my, I want it right on my forehead. I don't want this nonsense, you know. And besides, there's no medical reason for.
Of course, I mean, it's just
sprinkling ashes on the top of your head. This is how insane this is. And in a way, it's good. It's good that they are forcing themselves into corners of absolute psychosis, you know, and we should encourage it. I'm just trying to give people ideas. I'm not trying to brag about this. Look, at my age, I'm not looking for some kind of accolades. It's not going to bring me anything. I'm just trying to give people examples of how they can push back against the system. This is critical. We got to talk about this. So I read an article in Crisis Magazine by the new editor there, Eric Sammons, and he was talking about why the bishops need to push back against the mask mandates from the government, at least to the degree that they permit people not to wear masks and to not feel ostracized and condemned for not wearing a mask, right? Because that's what's going on here. These crackpot elitists who've commandeered the bureaucratic juggernauts, this is how they exercise power. They get us to become snitches and Karens and how to give the evil eye to our neighbors in order to advance their silly control mechanisms. So he wrote a great article, Crisis Magazine, last week. People could look it up if they want. Eric Sammons, Sammons. I was reminded as I was reading that about a passage in the Bible. It's Mark 16, 17, 18. It's the one where Jesus gives his great commission to the disciples to go out and evangelize the world. And then he says, and these are the signs that will follow those who believe in me. They'll be able to pick up serpents. They'll be able to drink deadly poisons, and it won't hurt them. And they'll lay their hands on people, and they'll get well. Now, why isn't that the kind of bold confidence that we approach this COVID, whatever it is, COVID pseudo-pandemic with, huh? I mean, here in Dominican Republic, they supposedly have 3,000 deaths over the course of a year. 3,000 deaths out of 10 million people. Well, that's nothing.
As a statistical phenomena, it is nothing. In other words, it's just as likely that it's zero as that number. So if it's, when you get to be such a small number, there's random noise which can get picked up, and then, you know, that ends up being the epidemic when you have no criteria that's coherent.
Right, and the elites know that most people have not had experience either in business, science, or engineering dealing with statistical phenomena, with signals. They know that. And they know that most people just gravitate towards these moronic, anecdotal, man on the street, girl on the street, woman on the street, boy on the street interviews, where they shove a microphone in somebody's face and say, are you scared? Are you frightened? And then they tell some single story. You know, these aren't how we need to make decisions. In other words, we need a revolution of information processing as a society. Because the news media with these kind of stories, they're not advancing public.
Well, the public doesn't know how to challenge them.
Right.
And that is a huge problem. However, it is getting better. I'll give it a really good example of this. Excuse me. They now have reporting, not the government, But Walgreens, you know, a private company that was supposed to be involved in administering the vaccines, particularly into old folks' homes, retirement homes, you know, medical centers for the aged. So Walgreens had this as a task. And their CEO has come back and said, well, it's a problem because over 60% of the staff will not take the vaccine. 60%.
Beautiful.
Over. Now, I think 20 years ago, 30 years ago, this wouldn't have happened. I think that's a direct result of the independent media's emergence, and that people now are developing skepticism and exchanging information that enables them to make an independent decision about whether or not they want to, use the gene therapy. And what was more interesting to me, or at least was just as interesting, was the fact that I believe the number, and please, if I'm wrong, I'm off just by a tiny bit, but it was 30% of the inhabitants of the retirement homes also refused the jab. Now, that is just amazing, because since I've had family members, including my mom at the moment, who are in these facilities, I can assure you that that number represents the majority, vast majority, of those who are conscious and able to make a decision. So, right. So what this means, what this tells me, is that the skepticism is really in a dramatic ascendancy. So right. This is great, and this just shows you that we have to just keep going as hard as we can at this point, because we are making progress. It may be hard to see because there are still so many people that are caught up in the thrall of the government propaganda. But nevertheless,
and we're not in charge of the news camera.
Exactly. But nevertheless, when you see this degree of skepticism spontaneously erupting from the population, it is a sign that the independent media is having effect. So this is why we are not discouraged. We are, in fact, we need to go forward and to organize the anti-vax into a political power. Because at this point, it needs to be. It'll be a perhaps majority of the country, certainly a majority of the thinking people of the country, and therefore, it's a tremendous powerhouse. The more that they demand that we take this gene modification therapy for a disease that no one is afraid of any longer, the more we expose them and their motives for the thing. And then just to get back for 1 second, you talk about the procession. People who know my book, Caesar's Messiah, know that I am skeptical about the origins of Catholicism. Nevertheless, I was raised a Catholic, and it was only a couple years ago I was in Seville, I believe it was. We were traveling throughout Spain, and we attended, my wife and I, a paso, which is a procession, a historical procession in which an image of Mary is carried through the street, and the entire town turned out. And that organizational energy, that kind of associated culture and group power was really visible during the Paso. And so this would be something, an organization, this is an example of an organization that could be very quickly turned into a political power against the COVID dictatorship. It would just take some brave soul in these kinds of organizations to stand up and say, look, we have to organize ourselves against this. We have to, for example, if I was in Seville and I was a Catholic involved in that community, I would say, we need a meeting. We need to take a vote. We need to have an official position that we're going to relay to the government concerning if we decide we're not going to do the jab and we're not going to accept any political consequences of this, we're going to fight you if you attempt that.
Yeah, and so these, and another way to think of these is as a rosary procession, that's Catholic.
Well, the Paso I attended was one, of course, that was dedicated to Mary.
Right. For the Catholics listening, that this has a deeply integrative effect. It's not. So what Joe and I are talking about is not merely something that is being exploited for political purposes, because it has tremendous community organizing effects. It's like rebuilding the immune system of society. And the whole veneration of Mary, I think, also speaks to the women who understand that we have a high regard for them and their role, whether they were mothers or not, but the type role of motherhood and what women bring to society, it's a way of us affirming that and letting them know that we recognize that. And although, I mean, our present society, it gives a lot of lip service to women and, oh, we're here to advance women. But it really has a very dismal view of the female, you know. The real world run by the oligarchs is one that envisions, males like Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab as running everything. And there's nothing that those kind of people detest more than the feminine spirit that organizes a family and a house, you know. There's another thing.
They're really opposed to what can be seen as classical femininity. They would oppose it in every possible way because it is generative. It creates future. And that's the problem with it. Because it creates a future, they have to oppose it since this is exactly what they want to control.
Right. They want a masculinized femininity. Oh, and you know, if you don't mind, there was another thing about, I started on that, mentioning about Eric Salmon's article and Mark 16 and, chapter 16 and 17, 18. So, if I can stick in a little personal story, just again to encourage people how to be bold. So when I was in graduate school, this is years ago, I think it's got to be in the 80s, before bed one night, I'm praying. As part of my nightly reflections, I read this scripture passage about the picking up snakes and drinking poisons and not getting hurt, right? In other words, faith does overcome a lot. We're not being anti-scientific here. It just says that, you know, if you have faith, you can really challenge a lot of the impediments that the real world presents to you, a lot of the dangers. So I'm praying this, and I go to bed, and I hear this crying from outside. And I go to my front door, and I look across the street, and there's a fella laying in his yard. And I have on is my pajamas and a t-shirt and no shoes, anything. Now, I'll tell you, I don't really know this fellow, even though I lived across the street for years. He was a young fellow, maybe in his 20s, blondish, you know, good-looking fellow. But he lived there with an older man, maybe in his 30s at that time, late 30s, right? And they'd disappear every morning, you know, and I don't know. I didn't know anything about them. I didn't know their names. They never talked to anybody. And me being the naive guy that I am, I never put anything together, you know. So I see this young fellow out in the yard, and I run across. I just open the door. I run across, and he's laying on the ground, and his wrist is slashed. And there were obviously some kind of problem in the hospital. I didn't have time to pay attention to that. So I take off my T-shirt. I mean, I had some experience working in emergency rooms. So I took off my T-shirt, wadded it up. I put it on his wrist, and I kneeled on his wrist to stop the hemorrhaging. And he's in nothing except all he has on is a pair of underpants. And so I'm screaming now for help, you know. And next thing you know, the neighborhood's filled with flashing red and blue lights, you know. So thank God the emergency equipment's here. the cops are walking around. And now I'm surrounded by a bunch of pant legs, you know, and people with plastic gloves on. And there's a cop who's kind of in command of the situation. And he's got the 6 foot long flashlight, you know, carbon arc flashlight. And he's shining this around. And the big giant picture window's broken. The living room that you can see inside is torn apart. It looked like a scene where Pink Panther was wrestling with a butler or something. And then the cops start saying, "What's going on here, guys? Somebody got tears in their beer?" He just kept repeating that. And I'm wondering, gee, you know, here I am kneeling on this guy's wrist, all this really expert medical personnel here. Shouldn't somebody be taking over for me here? And again, I see all this ring of blue gloves just hanging motionless, you know. And I look up and I realize, oh my God, here's a guy in underpants. I have nothing on now except my, you know, flannel pajamas with I don't know what kind of print on there. And then I realize, oh, I see what they're thinking. So somehow this all gets taken over by the proper authorities, and it all gets straightened out about what the backstory is here. So I take a little walk towards the ambulance with the head of the paramedics, and I say, I know what you're thinking here. So you're thinking that these guys are gay, and there's blood all over the place. Remember, this is 1980s.
Yeah, so yeah, with AIDS right at the
this
height
is the
of
AIDS
it, yeah.
stuff, right? And I say to him, I say, so tell me, can I get a report on whether this guy is HIV positive? And
yeah.
he said, you know what? No. In fact, we can't even find out from the hospital whether he turns out to be HIV positive or not. And you know, I'm kind of covered with blood at this point, you know. So just compare that. Well, one little side note is compare that with the reaction regarding COVID. Also what I want to say is, so I really do believe, I mean, I know I'm a scientist and all that, but I really do believe that I was prepared for that event with my little evening reflection of Mark 16, you know, assuring me that I can go with great confidence, at least, into this dangerous situation and not be unduly anxious about the risks involved. And that's how we have to do things. You know, life is an incredible risk, and we have to take those chances in order to do good things. And sometimes it gets us into complicated situations where we suffer losses, we suffer disadvantages, we could even lose our life, you know.
You can get sick, yeah, because trying to help someone doesn't mean you shouldn't think about trying to help them, though. I mean, self-sacrifice is the hallmark of a great culture. And it's a requirement, you know, of a great life, that you can actually care about something enough to risk your life to preserve it. So there's nothing wrong with that. You have to be very careful when you, you know, use this power, but it should be something in everyone's arsenal.
Yeah,
you know?
Well,
everyone should have that capacity to, if they need to be able to try to use self-sacrifice in order to save someone's life. That's, you know, that and to just do the right cultural thing, you know. So I think that's a really nice story, actually. Good for you for being brave.
Well, you know, and it's not people like there have been other events where I've done that. You know, I pulled a guy out of a burning car and people say, well, do you consider yourself a hero? And, you know, really in the moment, you don't you're not really thinking along those lines. You're just thinking about the situation, you know. So what I'm really trying to urge people to do is that these should be the normal activities.
Exactly.
Of just everybody. You know, we keep watching all these ridiculous shows and cartoons about superheroes and all that. And part of that is to separate us from our heroism. And
of course, yeah.
And you know, the other thing we talked about, Joe, is that at the outset was that having intellectual discussions, having a conversation down at the tavern with the guys from the neighborhood, having a discussion in your living room with the men and the women and your neighbors, you know, having a rosary march or writing letters to the bishop or snagging the priest at the end of the mass and say, Father, you got to stop this. For God's sake, stop this. Push back.
Yeah, you have to have the courage to be able to stand up for the principles of your faith. There's a few. I can't say only, but the one that is most visible is Bishop Vigano,
yes,
who I hope everyone is aware of his work, and will support him, because as you know, my radical suggestion to Vigano is to basically make a public declaration that the current pope is a traitor and is actually an agent of another organization. Vigano should accuse him of this and then declare himself the vicar, because he is the only one who's actually he's not the only one, but he is the most public and the most powerful of all of the individuals who have stood up against this. Whereas the current he could develop a following. The current pope is, of course, just an agent of the oligarchs. He's not someone who is, in my opinion, he has any independent agency at all. He's just their agent. So
and he's not, and you can tell he just doesn't even have the intellect.
No, and his background in Freemasonry is just very troubling to me. So I would just say, if I was in a Catholic organization, I would try to get the priest or the bishop to be public and to be a leader against the COVID dictatorship and the restriction against religious freedom. And I would also try to tell that individual that he should make a public declaration renouncing the pope, the current one, and asking Vigano to take this stance. Now, I know this wouldn't be very good for him politically, but I think the times are that desperate that we really need to find some way to animate Catholicism here. I mean, I'm probably the last person in the world to give this advice, but my honest opinion is, if you want it to survive, you're going to have to do some very, very bold actions at this point, because Catholicism is something that they're going to get rid of if we just accept all of these crude dictatorship processes that they've put us into.
Right. Yeah, I'm not completely as confident as you are that would work for institutional reasons, that Vigano declaring himself pope, but he certainly could expand his role as a parallel alternative voice. And, you know, for instance, my friend here in Dominican Republic has said, well, but you know, the church is under the authority of the secular government. Now, that's a whole interesting discussion throughout the Middle Ages, and right? Okay, but let's just put that aside for a second. You know, the message I get is, well, you know, if the bishops did that, they would close down the churches as they did last last year in 2020. And my response to that, Joe, is good. Let them do it. If I were the bishop, I would say, look, you guys have a mask mandate. I'll tell you what. Great. You enforce it. If you want to send police to my parishes, go ahead and do it. Start arresting people as they come out. In fact, you can come in. I can't stop you. Go in inside the church during Mass, and you drag them out of there for not wearing a mask. Go ahead, do it, and let's see what happens.
Exactly.
In other words, we got
exactly.
this idea that you can't have conflict. And, you know, it was like the woman at the airport that I talked about. She said, oh, I just hate conflict. Well, you know what? This is a darn problem with having these kind of people running the show, and we have been for decades selecting these kind of people to be bureaucratic leaders. And you know, saying no to things, raising your voice a little bit, showing irritation. these are not psychopathic behaviors. These are not predictors of somebody going berserk. These are normal, healthy reactions to injustice and insanity.
Yeah, well said, Dave. God, where does the time go? I've got to run. I hope we can do this again soon.